Hi, I'm Laura, and you're listening to In Memory of Mo. Last episode, we looked at the story as a whole, and we examined the general facts. But this week, we're going to zoom into specific details regarding Mo's death. Arguably, the most important part of this story are the police and their investigation. But before we begin, I'd like to take a second and refresh your memory, because the point of this podcast isn't to find out what happened. Most likely, I can't, and that's just the sad truth. It's still an ongoing investigation, and any information I get is going to be limited. But that's not the point. The point is to remember Mo and make his story live on forever. So let's go back to before his death. Mo's family members allegedly called the Beaumont Police Department around 10:55 p.m. that Monday night. They asked for a wellness check on Mo, who they thought was at Central Elementary School. They hadn't heard from him in a while. He didn't text them or anything. So they gave the police their suspected location. So naturally, the police responded to the request, and they arrived at the school to find Othman lying dead from a gunshot wound in the parking lot. The police are confident that Mo and his killer knew each other and his death wasn't random or an accident. If you recall from last episode, Patrick Hellerin from the Beaumont Police Department told this in a press conference. Any article online will tell you the same thing. No article has been published with case updates since April. And that particular article was just a follow-up. No new information was released since then in an article or in another press conference. So what was I to do? I emailed the Beaumont Police Department to see if anyone would talk to me. I didn't think anyone would, and I didn't think I'd get such a specific response. I thought I would just get an email from the secretary saying she'd put my message through, no guarantees that you're gonna get an answer. But surprisingly, I got a response from Tony Salia, head of the Beaumont Police Department. Not the head of the investigation, to be clear, the head of the Beaumont Police Department. But I kind of reacted too quickly because when I gave him my questions, he told me he couldn't tell me anything. And that was to be expected, like I said. It's an ongoing investigation, so they're legally required to keep it quiet, not only because it's ongoing, but also because it's a minor's case. So even if the case was closed, they wouldn't necessarily release the name of the killer or any details regarding case specifics since he is a minor and all minor cases are closed and sealed. In our conversation, though, he asked me to remember, quote, "The investigation has not gone stale and it is still being actively investigated," end quote. Which I thought was pretty reassuring. Though no new information has come out, he reassured me that they're still looking and it's being actively investigated. When he said not gone stale, it means they do have leads and they do have people that they're looking into and pursuing as suspects. But he also gave me a useful contact. He gave me Captain Patrick Hellerin's email, who is one of the head investigative policemen in Mo's case, and also the press officer. Again, Tony warned me. He said, "Captain Hellerin will be very limited in what he can divulge regarding the case." But I emailed him anyway. In my email to Hellerin, I didn't ask any questions, because I recognized the fact that he couldn't tell me much. Tony told me that. After a day, I got no response. Day two, I sent him a follow-up email, kind of just saying, "Hey, I emailed you, you didn't say anything. Just to refresh your memory, here's what I said." I also told him that Tony gave me his contact, maybe making it seem as if it wasn't just another spam email. Day three, no response again. So here we are, stuck. Get used to it. We're going to find ourselves in a lot of positions like this. But I was sitting and I was thinking, there's got to be some interviews out there, right? They have to have released something. And I spent a long time looking, sifting through Instagram posts and news reports from the time of the incident. After a while, though, I stumbled across one interview from ABC 7 News. But I didn't really get anything significant from the video. Every question that I would have asked was asked by reporters from the video. And each and every one of them was rejected by, "It's an ongoing case. We can't discuss it." But that was expected, and honestly, it's better to know than to be left in the dark. So, if the police couldn't speak, I tried to look if there were any public records that had Muhammad's name attached to them. Through all the news reports, I finally found a public records website, which was like a case file library right at my fingertips. I got so excited, but all I found was a sort of incident report, the kind that you'd file out when a kid pushes you on the playground. It was just a log that the event occurred, just a note saying, yes, legally this did happen, and yes, the police were aware of it. Nothing else. Stuck for a third time, second time in an episode. This was definitely the shortest road. It was almost guaranteed that I was going to get denied by the police. And I knew that. My fate was determined before I even reached out. So now we gotta step backwards and restart. Obviously, path one was a dead end. Muhammad spent most of his time at or around school, as football was through Carmont. Well, he did have some trusted adults at school, and trusted staff members, such as his teacher, Mr. Messina. And that's where we're going to go next. So stay tuned for episode 3, where we talk to school staff and continue putting the pieces together to remember Mo.